Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Carlos Barrios, and I represent the petitioner in this matter. And I think, finally, what we have here is a very interesting issue. We have an issue that's been lingering for some time, and it's whether Penal Code Section 245 of California is going to be considered a crime involving moral turpitude. Now, it's very important for us to first understand that there's already been a decision with respect to whether Penal Code Section 245 is a crime involving moral turpitude. In matter of Wu, recently the board indicated that it is a crime involving moral turpitude. Now, in order for us to proceed in this particular venue, we have to determine whether this court owes the board due deference with respect to that particular decision. Now, in Cerrone, which is a decision that came out of the Ninth Circuit in 2014, this court indicated that it will not give due deference where the board decided the elements of a particular crime section. In matter of Wu, that's exactly what the court did. The board indicated that the reason that they found that Penal Code Section 245 is a crime involving moral turpitude was because they declared it to be a crime that requires specific intent. Now, that's essentially determining the elements of the case, of the statute. If that's the situation, then under Chevron, this board indicated that it would not give due deference to the board. That being the case, we can proceed to determine whether Penal Code Section 245 is a crime involving moral turpitude. Now, I take the position that it's not, primarily because in order for this particular type of
conviction... But you agree that the first issue we need to get past is whether or not matter of Wu is entitled to Chevron deference.
Correct.
So you don't contest if we were to find that it's entitled to Chevron deference, you don't contest that matter of Wu is properly applied to your case, even though it had not been decided and not been relied upon by the board in your case.
If this court determines that under Chevron the board should be given due deference, then obviously I run into quite a complication. But based on my analysis, I don't believe that to be the case. The board in Wu clearly looked at the elements of the statute, and by doing so, if we then read and reapply Cerrone versus Holder, this particular court clearly indicated that the BIA lacks the expertise to be able to identify the elements of the crime. So if that's the case...
Are you contending that it misidentified the elephant?
Not misidentified, just interpreted, right? So at the moment that the board begins to interpret the elements of the crime, that's fine, they can do that. But it then allows this court to essentially reanalyze whether they did it correctly, because...
Are you saying they did it incorrectly?
I think so, yes. I think they
did.
But
what's your argument?
Well, they declared that the mens rea requirement for Penal Code Section 245 was specific intent. And I don't believe that's the case at all whatsoever. In our particular case, if you look at the original brief filed by the government, the opening brief, it clearly indicates the elements of what took place. We have an individual who was drastically and dramatically under the influence of alcohol, proceeded to drive and committed an offense, right? And if we then look at the code section 245, and we look at Williams, which is a California case, we clearly see that Penal Code Section 245 is not a specific intent crime. It's a general intent crime.
Where in Wu does it say that the board believed that this offense, 245A1, involves a specific intent mental state?
It would be on my page 11. Now, I'm not sure if that's the particular page that you're going to have, but... It's definitely on page 11, and it's the first, one, two, three, about the fifth or sixth paragraph down from section 2 where it says analysis. And that's where you'll see that the board indicated that in order for them
to... The beginning words of the paragraph you're referring to?
Right. In this way, we have determined that an assault statute that makes it unlawful for a perpetrator to cause physical injury must possess specific intent. And from that point on, they went on to determine that categorically, Penal Code Section 245 is a crime involving moral turpitude. But we run into a major issue, because in order for you to be convicted of Section 245, you can commit various offenses, including being reckless and including being criminally negligent, which is the case we have. In order for you to be convicted of Penal Code Section 245 under a reckless application, you have to be aware of what took place.
I know. On page 11, the language you've read, they're just setting out, not unlike the way we did in Cerrone, the kind of differing poles. On the one hand, when an assault statute, they're basically saying, has specific intent, that would be one thing. Conversely, we have held that an assault statute prohibiting a perpetrator from causing injury to another with criminal negligence does not find. So they're kind of saying specific intent, negligence. Right. When they describe where this statute falls on page 14, I don't see the specific intent language.
Well, it says here, right? In other words, the Ninth concluded that in Grajeda, the violation must require a culpable mental state greater than recklessness or criminal negligence.
Right, but that's...
But what's greater than that?
That would be below specific intent, wouldn't it?
But even to that degree, let's assume that it is below specific intent, and it fits right above criminal negligence. There must, if that is the case, there must be something in there then where the individual that committed the offense was aware of what was taking place, right? There has to be an awareness. For recklessness, there's got to be awareness. And if you go higher than that, there must be intent or some sort of awareness of what's taking place. And this particular situation, that couldn't be the case because by the very facts of the case, he was completely drunk. How could he be possibly aware of anything?
But we have a statute that we've said we apply, you know, the categorical and the modified categorical approach. So what we're looking to is the elements of the conviction and not the underlying facts of that gave rise to the conviction.
Precisely, right? So in Wu, they went straight for categorical. We don't even see modified in there. So they go straight for categorical and they say, this case, this particular code section, on its face, categorically, crime involving moral turpitude. And I agree with you. I think they should have gone to the modified. But they didn't. They went straight for the top. And at the top, on its face, they apparently agree that it's supposed to be a crime involving moral turpitude. And I don't think that's the case. I think for us to get there, we may have to go deeper. Now, in my case, that may be the situation. Maybe the facts lend themselves to that. But they didn't go to that situation. They didn't go that far. And so I still take the position that on its face, Penal Code Section 245, based on the way it's written, and based on the requirements of the mental state, right, criminal negligence and above, it's not possible for it to be categorically a crime involving moral turpitude. It's just too much. It's overbroad. All sorts of different acts can fit in there. And that's fine, but then we can move on.
Just say mental state. They said mental state combined with another aggravating
right.
factor, and it's the combination of the two.
Correct.
Why is that wrong in your view?
I agree with the theory, right, where if you have the mental state and if it's criminal negligence and then you attach an aggravating factor of some sort, then yes, it could be elevated. But then it begs the question, then is that categorically a CIMT or is it modified? I think it should be modified because then you're looking at essentially the guts of the case, which is fine. I do not disagree with the modified approach, but I totally disagree with the categorical application. It's a very blunt statement, and it's a blanket application, and I don't think that should be the case. But if we're going to look forward, we should look forward.
But as I read this, they're saying categorically it's a crime involving moral turpitude because it's got an elevated scienter. It's not quite at the top, but an elevated scienter and an elevated aggravating factor in the underlying conduct. And the combination of those two is what makes it meet the test in Cerrone. Why is that wrong categorically?
So the question you have, right, it's the question I've had as well. Essentially, right, so they're saying if you have, you know, the mens rea, the basic element, then you add the aggravating factor, how is that elevated? And again, I go back to the same thing. It's on its face, 245 does not lend itself to that. There is nothing in the statute that's written there that allows it to have so many aggravating factors. In fact, one of the portions, it says, or an instrument. I mean, what is that instrument? It could be almost anything, a paperclip. So if it's a paperclip, it's automatically going to be launched.
It has to be deadly.
Well, not necessarily. The end result must be that, but not the instrument necessarily. So the aggravating factor is what exactly? I get that there's a result, and I get that there's an act, but there has to be something in the middle that links these two things together. And there's a lot in that middle. It's a very fat middle. And all sorts of things fit in that middle. And that's the
deadly
problem.
Deadly applies to both weapon and to instrument in
Precisely.
The statute.
Instruments. What are those
in the
instruments?
Instrument.
I don't know. It could be almost anything.
An automobile.
I'm sorry?
An automobile.
In my case, it was an automobile. But now we're talking about modified. On its face, right? On its face, it could be any instrument. And again, I go back to the
Not
same...
Not any instrument is deadly.
Well, it depends what it is. If I just have a, you know, something sharp and I'm just holding it, it's not deadly. If I throw it at somebody's face, it possibly could be. But that's the problem. It's a very broad application. And that's my concern with it. Well, in any event, I think that's the core of the case.
Is I think whether you were saying that Wu misapplied Chevron, right?
No. I said that in order for this court to consider whether Wu was wrong or right, we first have to look at Chevron to determine whether
Chevron. The first thing that the first step is whether the particular statute is ambiguous or doesn't fit the exact issue in the case. Are you taking the position that CIMT, crimes involving moral turpitude, is a vague issue, is a vague ambiguous term?
It is, of course it is, and that's been
well. If that's so, then why can't Chevron deference be applied to it by the administrative agency?
Because in Cerrone v. Holder, which is this court's case, the court clearly said the BIA lacks the expertise in identifying the elements of the statute, and for that reason, we cannot give due deference to a BIA decision when it interprets and applies elements of a case, of a statute. It's clear. It's in Cerrone v. Holder. This court held that. And that being the case, this court cannot give due deference. It's allowed to look at it again. And I think that's the position I think that's what you're asking me, correct? If there are no questions for now, I'll reserve the remainder of my time. I believe I have 3 minutes.
May it please the court, Robert Tennyson for the government. I don't understand the petitioner's theory. It seems to be that any time the board discusses state cases or the elements of the offense in applying the categorical approach to determine whether or not an offense is a crime involving moral turpitude, it's gone wrong. That can't make sense. I mean, the thing is, the board can look at the specific statute, the specific elements. In this case, it in fact assumed the elements that this court sort of highlighted were in the statute in Ceron and has highlighted subsequently in cases such as, I guess, Vasquez-Gonzalez, and said that these elements rise to the level of a crime involving moral turpitude. That what we've got here is a general intent offense, which the California Supreme Court said was the case in Williams, and this court has similarly said in cases like Gravelia and Vasquez-Gonzalez, and can look at that and say, okay, it's a general intent offense. It has this other component having to do with what? Mere knowledge of the facts that would lead a reasonable person to determine what the end result would be, right? The risk of harm to another individual. And then said, look, this is not normatively different than a pure recklessness statute that we have found previously to constitute a crime involving moral turpitude. That is completely within the agency's discretion. If the board can't do that, if the board can't evaluate the elements, then how is it supposed to engage in the crime involving moral turpitude determination at all? Even elements that have been set forth already by the court and that the Board of Immigration Appeals accepts. In any case, this statute here, and the board reasonably found that this statute here, meets the level of crime involving moral turpitude. That is, it has a reprehensible conduct, and that is the likely impact, right? The likelihood of great bodily injury, which is substantial or severe injury to another individual, and that it has a sufficiently culpable mens rea. It, you know, this offense involves the commission. Let's see, intentionally committing a violent act. I mean, that's the way it's been described. It's been described by this court in Gavalia. It's been described by this court in determining whether this is a crime of violence. That is the mental state. And it reasonably found that it's just that this general intent offense, which involves this intentional commission of a violent act, is sufficient to be a highly culpable mental state.
Let me ask you the same question I asked your opposing counsel, which is there any obstacle to applying matter of Wu in this case, even though it was not reached or applied by the board?
No, Your Honor. The board's decision in matter of Wu supersedes the decision that came before. And even if it didn't, matter of Wu would make it futile to send it back because matter of Wu has decided categorically what the offense is.
Is there any daylight between the BIA's decision in this case and matter of Wu that you can detect?
The board's decision, and I can grab it over there, seems a little different in its terms than matter of Wu. I'd have to go back and think through it because I've been thinking about Wu, but I do remember there being some differences between the decisions, yes, that the rationales in the two weren't entirely the same. This court had, it's a different take. I would say that the board's focus in this decision was on People v. Williams language having to do with the fact that this statute doesn't involve criminal negligence or mere recklessness, but does have a general intent component. And it relied on that to say, you know, that brings it above the threshold for to be a crime involving
coupled
moral turpitude.
With the aggravating,
aggravating
are in Wu and in the decision below.
That is correct, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But beyond that, there's no reason to think it's any different than think it's any different than Wu in any significant fashion.
And the government concedes that the first element of Chevron that Judge Bayer was asking about is met, that this is ambiguous?
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, this court found that in Saran, and that's part of the reason why it sent back to the board. All right. This court has no further questions. The government will rest.
I suppose the only real issue remains that the government keeps relying on this issue of recklessness. And I agree that the recklessness does lend itself more to determine whether something is a CIMT, but when it comes to recklessness under Williams and several other cases, there has to be some actual awareness. And that's where we start, where it gets really complicated, because at that point, we're really looking at the person's mental state and the mens rea involved in these particular crimes. And in Williams, they made it clear that for this particular code section, it could be done without any specific intent, obviously, and that it doesn't even require the offender to perceive the injury that's going to occur. That's, in my opinion, substantially under recklessness. I mean, that's pretty clear that it's criminal negligence. I don't see how it arises anywhere any further than that. So that's the position I would take. If you have criminal negligence, you can't possibly have a crime involving moral turpitude. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case of Safarian versus Barr is submitted.